Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday, January 22nd edition of Byers & Company. We'll tackle a couple of subjects this hour. Chief Getz is going to join us. We're going to talk about crime stats, plus Rachel Rodiger and Tim Mackin, the executive director of the Mink County Mental Health Board. Focus on the future. Byers & Company starts right now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on a Tuesday, good morning and welcome. Police Chief Jim Getz joins us in studios here today. I have a show to do. You know, we invite you in to do the show, and that's really all I can control is to give folks the time to have a decent conversation about things. But I want to get not your opinion, because I think we have maybe probably too much of that. But when I see a headline, Decatur community leaders work to combat violence as police say crime trending downward. Police don't say anything. Statistics say that crime is down.
Yeah, we're definitely not lying.
I mean, this isn't
it.
An opinion.
Not an opinion, not a lie, not trying to mislead anybody. The crime stats are down, so why not put that out there? It's a positive about our community, so why not share that?
Yeah, and it's not like you're saying that there isn't crime or there isn't more work to do or there isn't still stuff that we have to tackle. And I applaud those people who stood up yesterday and said we're going to form a committee and work to try to get more answers. Okay, great to all of that. I just don't understand why there has to be, from local media, this tendency to say, well, let's disprove this.
Yeah, nobody's saying we don't have work to do or we don't want it to make it even better. But when there's a positive about this community, I feel like I owe it to the community and my officers to share it because, guess what, it's something good and something positive to talk about.
All right, and the idea that you have to sort of explain or define the difference between a murder and a homicide doesn't make any sense to me at all. Because someone dies doesn't mean that it's murder.
Right, and that's the case sometimes. You know, we had the accidental shooting late last year.
Tragic,
you
know, tragic thing. But the intent was not there to murder someone.
That's absolutely right. And it is unfortunate that you have to explain that. And I don't know why we're at that point in this culture.
Yeah, I know. That's why you're here, so we can have some in-depth conversation. And I felt like you got to put a qualifier on it. Like, of course you're going to continue to work to even make those numbers lower. But let's at least recognize if you look and you go back 2013 to 2018, 2015 to 2018, you look at these stats and overall crime is down. That's a testament to the job that your men and women do every day, to the community leaders, to the people who work with kids, social service programs. I mean, you can put a lot of people on that credit list, but let's take time to acknowledge that some of this stuff we're doing in this community is working.
Absolutely. It's a group effort. But, you know, if you look at the total property crimes and total violent crimes, what's impressive is those 2018 numbers are lower even than the 2015 numbers when the EDC did their report, and we looked good at that time. So that, to me, that's impressive. That shows that a lot of people are doing a lot of good things.
All right, let me tell you from a media perspective, from someone who gets an awful lot of press releases from law enforcement, and I think this is just a perception thing. People have a perception of Decatur, and it's been changing. I mean, you know, EDC and a lot of folks have put a lot of effort into shifting that perception. I'm telling you, in our news email, we get far more emails about crimes in Champaign-Urbana than we do Decatur on a weekly basis, week in, week out. Yet the perception is University of Illinois, and they've got all this great culture, and they're having crime problems over there they've never faced.
Yeah, I don't know what the mix-up is and what's so hard to understand. I think crime is lower here than some of our comparable cities. I always hear, and I think it gets mixed up, well, when I go to Champaign, there's more to do. Well, that's not the same thing as crime. Or when I go to Springfield, there's more restaurants to eat that. Well, that's fine, but that has nothing to do with the crime rate indicator.
No, it doesn't. And I think a lot of that is just a perception thing.
Right.
And they're going through, actually, some of the things that we went through in the 90s, you know, which is really not even their fault. It wasn't our fault at the time. Right. A lot of this moving through Chicago and St. Louis, and it lands somewhere in central Illinois, and then you get gang retaliation, which just leads to gang retaliation. I mean, it's a cycle that's vicious, and I'm not even sure what a community can do about it.
Yeah, they were very lucky back in the 90s when we were going through our problems, and you're absolutely right, and I've talked to their chief a few times. They're facing some of the same problems we were years ago. And I don't know if there's not a magic wand or magic pill out there. You know, when we have our shootings, people are like, what can we do about it? And we do the best we can, but there's not one single answer. And once we do that, we can put a patent on it and make a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to solve that entirely. Lindsay made the point earlier that, you know, economists will say when you get to a certain percentage point of unemployment, you're fully employed. I think that that's the way crime rates and statistics have to be looked at, because unfortunately, and this isn't even just this state or this country, globally, communities are going to have people that will take advantage of other people.
Absolutely. It happens all the time, and it's sad that they play on the weak, you know, usually the kids and the elderly, and that's what happens.
All right. How big of a role does drugs play in the world of crime? I mean, from just not necessarily even murder, but theft, you know, all of the ripple effects of drug addiction and selling of drugs to those addicts. How big a factor is that in all crime?
Yeah, I don't have the numbers on that, but I can tell you that it is huge. I mean, you arrest somebody for a theft a lot of times, or a burglary, or even a violent crime, and you talk to that person, most of them are, a lot of them have a drug issue, or buying drugs, or selling drugs. So it's all connects.
Yeah,
or a
combination of drugs and mental health issues, which we're going to talk about a little later this hour with a couple of other guests. I mean, you know, a lot of that, people are self-medicating.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot over the last couple of years, mainly from our former sheriff and you know, the author of a very interesting book about this 50 border state crisis about opioids and you know, when you're arresting like 67-year-old grandmothers with no criminal history, I mean, that has to be tragic for law enforcement.
It is sad, and these officers have hearts, and they feel for these folks and know that they've never been in trouble, and all of a sudden now you're arresting them for a felony drug arrest. So that is tough.
And how big of a resource is that going to be, having a 30, you know, plus million dollar facility that's state of the art?
That's huge for this community, and what I've heard is it's going to draw the not so many wanted from other places. But I just think that's
this place
silly
is being built for arsenal. It's going to be pretty amazing. All right, so what do you know, you look,
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, it's going to be pretty amazing. All right, so what do you know, you look at these numbers, and of course I you know, murder rates are always interesting, because I mean, you could have a spate of 1 week that could change your murder rates, you know, for an entire year based on retaliation. I mean, how often do the shootings that happen in this community and elsewhere go directly to that? Somebody gets shot, and then next thing you know, three or four other people are going to get shot back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not all of them, but a lot of our shootings are connected, and it's the retaliation thing. We try to stay on top of it before it happens. A lot of times we can get that information beforehand and start targeting some of those folks. But a lot of times it's too late by time that shooting's taking place and somebody's murdered. So, and the other issue is getting the community to talk to us. And I think the community is doing a lot better, but we still want that information.
All right. And how is it, how do you find the community here versus the way it's being defined nationally as far as police versus community? I don't think much of the national news actually reflects what most of the country, I mean, we see Ferguson, right? We watch Baltimore, but what you don't see is what happens here on a local basis. And I'm assuming we're not alone. A lot of 100,000 plus, you know, communities that we're really not at war with each other. There may be tension. There may be people who have questions, but I see our community doing it differently than elsewhere.
I do too. And I don't know what it is, but I can tell you when I'm out, I get a very good reception at most places I go. Granted, I'm not out on the streets handling calls every day either, but what I will tell you is when we do have a major event, the community seems to rally and do the right thing.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, being out there. I know that's important to you as chief. I got to see, you know, it's just one day, but when we do the Cops and Gobblers thing with the Boys and Girls Club, it's great to see, particularly the canine units, because these folks, you know, they're generally not called in under happy situations. I mean, if they're dealing with the public, somebody's getting searched, there's a problem. So is it nice to have them out there in a different sort of way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, around the Boys and Girls Club, there's so many kids. And, you know, what I can remember times where the canine would show up somewhere and you got these kids, you know, there's that dog, you stay away from him, he's going to bite you. But then when these kids get to see these officers and these canines in a different light or different circumstance, it makes a big difference.
Okay. So do you have an overall reason why you think crime stats are down? I mean, is it a different way? Is it the proactive approach, as you were talking about earlier? Is it communicating better with people in the neighborhoods where, you know, get unduly, you know, impacted by a lot of this crime? I mean, what would you say the secret is?
I think for especially a lot of the property crimes, getting the information and just the investigative techniques we have now with the social media and just different avenues we have, we can identify.
How stupid are people? I mean, I know criminal behavior in itself is kind of, but I mean, the bragging about it on social media, that's a fairly new phenomenon.
And that's one of the things our guys do. I mean, they're on the social media, and if you can catch one burglar through something he's posted on social media, you probably will solve 15 burglaries because a burglar's, you know, he's committing more than one burglary. A person that goes out to Walmart and steals, they're not stealing. That's not the first time they've stolen. They've done it a lot. The stolen vehicles, you've got the same people that steal vehicles all the time. So it's a small group, and usually they give themselves away. They talk to somebody. They're putting it on social media. And so when we follow up on those, we can solve several cases and keep several incidents happening in the future.
All right. Have organizations like Crime Stoppers, I mean, has that evolved in that same way? You know, I mean, it's kind of like this 800 hotline kind of thing. But is a lot of that coming through, like what people are finding on social media?
We do get a lot of the Crime Stoppers information, which helps. One thing that Crime Stoppers did years ago is I reached out to them because of the stolen guns. Before, they would just offer money for a solving of a felony. And my thing was, you know, the guns are causing a lot of our problems. So if somebody calls in with information that they see these kids storing illegal guns in an abandoned house, call us. And will Crime Stoppers pay for that? And at that time, they took that to the state board, and the Crime Stoppers here said yes, and the state board said yes, we'll do that. So that's helped a little bit as well.
All right, let me ask, and I don't want to get into like the whole Second Amendment debate, but if you had to sort of guess about how many, you know, criminal acts are committed with like actually registered firearms, how big a percentage?
It's very, very low. You know what? Several years ago, and I can't remember what year it was, the concealed carry went into effect. And yeah, I can tell you, we've had less than five incidents with somebody with concealed carry over. It's probably been 4 years now since that law's been enacted. So it's not a big deal. These people that want to exercise their Second Amendment rights, have the concealed carry, have the FOIDs, carry their guns legally, they don't want their guns taken from them. So they do everything they can to stay within the confines of the law.
Yeah, but most crime, I remember asking this. Remember when Paul Vallis was running for lieutenant governor, and you know, he talked about crime statistics and then asked about gun laws. I mean, the obvious question to me, which it seems like no one asks, if you take the city of Chicago and you take the number of murders they had in the year 2018, how many of those murders were committed by somebody who had a registered firearm in their name?
It's very, very limited.
It's a tiny fraction.
Very few. I think the biggest issue that I would say is this, with the legal gun owners, is secure your gun.
Absolutely, because it's on you if your kids are playing with it and accidentally shoot each other.
Or they get stolen.
Yes.
And end up in somebody's hand that is out there committing those crimes. And that's what we see a lot. A lot of our shootings, not a lot, but a fair percentage, is from a gun stolen from a burglary that should not be on the street.
No,
so,
that gun
needs
to be locked up.
Secure your guns.
All right, that's good advice. So tell me what you guys are doing to reach out to kids.
Well, we do a lot.
I mean, the kids want to become police officers.
We have some, and I'm surprised that we go to some of the inner city schools, and you see nationally that, you know, the kids maybe don't like police or the community don't like police. When we walk in, man, those kids are smiling. They want hugs. They want to shake your hand. So we go to a lot of the schools, breakfast, you know, with the kids. Obviously, you know, we're involved with the Boys and Girls Club, the community events at the parks. We're at all those places, and I can tell you most of the kids there love the police.
All right, what do you hear from just John Q. Citizen, you know, when you're out there doing your coffee with a cop or these different programs, these outreach programs? What do you hear from folks mostly about?
What I hear is hey, we want to thank your officers for the job they do. We wouldn't want to do it, and keep up the good work.
All right, what do we know where a lot of the crime happens, right? Where a lot of – how big are gangs right now?
We have the hybrid gangs. You know, these aren't the GDs and the vice lords from back in the 90s that you alluded to earlier. These are the homegrown gangs that really aren't organized like they used to be, which makes that really tougher to take down. You know, when you had the GDs and vice lords that were these criminal organizations, you could target those leaders of that group, and once you took the leaders down, you basically could cripple that organization. You don't have that here. These are the homegrown gangs where the kids are hanging out on the corner. There's 10 of them. One or two of them may be leaders, but they're not really in charge, and they're not in the drug trade as much as the gangster disciples and the vice lords were back in the 90s.
Yeah, and would people be astonished at the drug trade and how sophisticated it is?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, not even stuff here, but coming through here.
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely would. I mean, these organizations that are in the business of selling drugs and trafficking drugs, it's an organization. It's just like a business, just like the business here, the business at the police department. They run their organizations like a business.
I have read that the cartels in Mexico are so sophisticated in their knowledge. And I guess, you know, with knowledge being accessible to everyone now in a way it wasn't 20 years ago in the 90s when we had a lot of problems. You know, they are literally putting more drugs into communities with fewer resources to treat those. I mean that's how sophisticated it is.
Absolutely. They know what they're doing. They're going to target organization or cities that do not have those treatment centers. And maybe the incomes in those areas are low, and they know people that have those issues.
I mean, they're basically
are going to resort to drugs. They're targeting.
Like geofencing drug deals. I mean, it's crazy.
It's no different than the media, you know, reaching out to certain demographics to sell a product.
No, it's amazing to me. What about legalized marijuana? It looks like the state's heading that direction. I'm not asking you for a political opinion. I just think people go, oh, it's a victimless crime, and they don't take into account some very serious factors. One, those cartels I just mentioned are now creating and selling opioids and fentanyl because of, you know, Colorado and everywhere else growing marijuana. There's no need. So they're using their fields and their power to bring much more dangerous drugs into this country. That's a direct result of legalized marijuana.
Well, I'm a firm believer that cannabis is a gateway drug. I mean, once you start doing that, you're going to want something a little stronger, more powerful, more exciting to use. The effect that it's going to have on the economy, I think the people that are making money off of it will love it. However, the insurance companies and places like that, you look at Colorado, those insurance companies out there are struggling because all the accidents caused by these drivers that are high on marijuana while they're driving. I think the bigger issue is just because marijuana is going to be legal, which it will be here in Illinois, I have no doubt, that doesn't mean companies are going to back away from having a drug test. So where are you going to get your workforce from? That is my question.
Yeah. What does it do for canines and searches? And I mean, all the things, I don't know that people think about what that means, that you might take a whole bunch of guns or drugs off the street because that dog can tell there's been marijuana. And now you can't do that, right?
That there's a case law out there in Colorado that says, no, you cannot do that. That has not made it to the United States Supreme Court. It'll be interesting how they rule on that. And we may be establishing our own case law here in Illinois when marijuana is legalized. And so if the courts come out and say that your dog cannot be used to as a
you can't search a car
for marijuana,
when
you have a new dog, you're just not going to train them for that product anymore.
But would you say, though, that plays a significant role in searches and seizures and finding other stuff beyond?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just because the dog hits on marijuana, I mean, how much is he hitting on? I'm sure when they pass this law, you can only have a certain amount. So the dog can't tell you how much is in there. So if that dog hits on marijuana, in my opinion, the police should be able to go into that car and see, you know, how much do you have and what else is in that car.
All right, it'll be interesting times.
It will be.
And the social problems that it leaves behind are more costly than the revenue stream that's created by legalizing. And I think that we've seen that with the gaming thing, where, you know, you're promised billions of dollars, you know, and that comes in way low, but then there's no money to pay for the damage that's done.
Yeah, I can't remember what state it was. It legalized marijuana over the last few years. And when they looked at the general budget from the money they got from the marijuana sales, it was like less than 1 or 2%. And for me, that's not worth the headache that's going to create.
Yeah, I mean, we can't find truck drivers now. I mean, they're not going to just not. I mean, because marijuana is legal, they're not going to let you smoke marijuana and drive a truck.
No, there's case law out there that supports these companies sticking to their drug test. I think it was Dish Network or Xfinity out in Colorado basically said. This kid had a medical marijuana card, and they still said, you can't come to work smoking this stuff. And he ended up losing his job, went to the courts. The courts defended the company.
All right, Chief, you got to deal with stuff that no other chief's ever had to deal with,
it's,
right?
It's a different day and age, that's for sure.
All right, so let me ask you a question we haven't talked about for a long time. You know, we worry about terrorism, we worry about crime, we worry about drones. What's the latest with like drones? I mean, I read a warning this morning that they're worried about these outdoor sporting events, you know, particularly like if you go to Arrowhead Stadium, you know, in Kansas City. I mean, that's just a big round bowl with a whole open sky. How easy would it be to drop a drone into that?
Oh, it'd be very easy to do that. And I know the bad thing is, and I went to a class about a month ago, we're constantly playing catch up with these new pieces of equipment they have. And so to tell you the truth, I don't know what the answer is. What I can tell you is that you have to have permission from the FAA to fly these things. But how do you get them off the ground is a thing. And somebody could fly that thing from 3 miles away. You would never find out where they're flying this thing from, who's operating it. You just know it's above the crowd that you're, you know, you're watching over.
All right. Finally, before we let you get out of here, thank you for last year and into this year. I'm not sure people have any understanding of just all the work that goes in to keep the community safe during the Decatur celebration and during all the events that happen. And I know you guys take all that very seriously. You want people to come out and have fun. But when you watch what happened in Las Vegas, I mean, you got to have a realistic notion that anything can happen at any time.
You have to. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Brian, we've changed the way we've done some things at celebration. I don't want to go into detail, but what I'm telling you is we have changed a lot based on things that have happened in other areas that 10, 15, 20 years ago we didn't think about. And so we're trying to stay ahead of the game, try to prepare for everything, and I hope that we're doing that.
All right, Chief Getz, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming in today.
Brian, thank you.